The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You live here. He lives here.
Chris, I love your show.
With everything that's going down, it could really suck the life out of you. I mean, and with your sense of humor, it kind of softens the blow a little bit.
Hey, Chris, good morning to you, and just wanted to enjoy your show, and you and Fast Eddie are doing a great job over there. It's a beautiful day.
Perhaps the voting is much different than other states are talking about. They're talking about unsolicited, where thousands and even millions of ballots are sent to people. Absentee voting is a much different thing. I like absentee voting because you have to request and get it. That's good. You have to go through a process. But unsolicited voting, where they send millions of ballots out to people that they have no idea who the people are, what's going on. They have very little idea. If you take a look at what's happened, it's terrible. But with New Hampshire, I have great confidence in your governor.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
The mayor of Portland is blaming the president for violence. The governor of Wisconsin doesn't want the president to even visit Kenosha. The senator from Connecticut is just saying it today on Twitter. Donald Trump is murdering people. He's just saying it. Did you hear that? That's what the Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy said. Can we just take the gloves off and tell the truth? Trump is deliberately killing people. The governor of New Jersey is sitting in a restaurant eating as it's raided by the health Nazis. And the mayor of Philadelphia, for good measure, is seen dining inside without a mask at his pal's restaurant in Maryland while he continues to keep restaurants in Philadelphia shut down. So that's the state of your Democrats in 2020, ladies and gentlemen. Hypocrites and lunatics across the board, from coast to coast, from sea to shining sea. In every state you can find them, every Democrat behaving erratically, hypocritically, irresponsibly, and like lunatics. They're behaving like utter lunatics. If it's not hypocrisy, it's lunacy. Anyway, hope your weekend was a great one. What a day yesterday was. Wow. You know, if you could bottle and sell a weather day, that's my day. I don't know about you, but that for me, sitting out on the front porch yesterday, and I told my daughter that, she said, oh, it's a little chilly. Women are just wired that it's a little chilly. I said, no. I don't know if they need a little humidity in the air or what it is. Somehow, if you could take a day, what was yesterday's temperature? Upper 70s?
Yeah, like 77, 78.
That with zero humidity, maybe a little breeze. I could take or leave the breeze, but even a little breeze. That is it. Died and gone to heaven weather for me. I don't know about you, but that's... I saw a lot of people and heard a lot of people commenting on what a great day it was yesterday. The women always, that's a little... I could use a little wrap. No, that is... If I could keep a day in perpetual motion for the rest of my life, it was yesterday. Anyway, hope your weekend was a great one. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. And we're online at 990theanswer.com. I guess Jeffrey Lurie, owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, had like a 52-minute press conference yesterday where he talked at length about his feelings about the social unrest and Black Lives Matter and whatnot. I didn't. I'm only bringing it up because on the other side of it, the head coach of the Flyers, who did not have a good day yesterday, head coach of the Flyers came out last week and said, I've been really hip deep and studying and whatever hockey. I don't know my hockey, but I've been drawing up plays. I've been working on our game plan. I don't know what he said. And you know, it's funny for social media warriors, and I suppose a lot of you who listen to this show, this is implausible. I understand this may seem laughable, but it's also a sign that if you can't understand this or you don't believe this, you need probably to examine yourself. There is rage at Alain Vigneault because he actually said, I don't really pay attention to, I don't know what's been going on in the news. Do you believe that? First of all, may I just ask you, do you believe him? Now, of course, that's since changed. Flyers head coach Alain Vigneault finds himself in hot water after he stated last week and reiterated that his sole focus was on preparing for their Game 3 matchup against the Islanders and not what had been going on with the shooting of Jacob Blake. That dandy, by the way, there'll be more to talk about him coming up too. This whole Jacob Blake thing, just so we're clear, is a complete fraud. Jacob Blake is a rapist. Jacob Blake, frankly, if I had the opportunity to shoot Jacob Blake myself, I would have. If Jacob Blake did what he did to that woman and apparently other women, I'd have shot him point blank myself if she were my relative. So there's that. As far as I'm concerned, it's unfortunate Jacob Blake is still alive. How's that? How you like that? I wish they could have taken him out myself. How you like that? So this Jacob Blake story is a fraud, but we'll get into why that is in just a little bit. Anyway, there are people calling for Vigneault who, you know, I guess since he's kind of tried to come out and address this and clarify, but there are some who are saying it was irresponsible of him to come out and say he's not been paying attention and doesn't really know the circumstances surrounding Jacob Blake. Because last week, as you remember, and heading into the weekend, they wanted everybody to shut everything down. I lost track of who was not playing and who was playing. What did they cancel and what not cancel? Saturday in passing, I saw the NBA players playing after taking a knee during the national anthem. I thought they weren't playing. Was it just a game they're not playing?
I think ultimately most of the sports leagues missed one game. Like one actual game.
Okay, so they just took a game off. It wasn't that they were striking in perpetuity.
Yes.
Oh, I think it would have been more impactful if they just quit. Don't you? I mean, what's one game? Why don't you really make a statement and shut the season down? What the hell's the point in one game? If you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly, do it all. One game? Ooh! Tough guys, one game. They really mean it, folks. They're not going to play a game for one. What a bunch of candy asses. If you're going to man up and protest, then do it right. Walk out and don't come back. I didn't even know. I could care less about. Folks, I'm not being a tough guy here when I say this to you because I've expressed to you before. My family and I enjoy football on the weekends in the fall more than just about anything, as you know, many families do across the country. And I know that there are some of you in this audience who hate sports and have never paid attention to sports or football at all, and you have no time for it. And I know there are some of you who said, well, Chris, that was long ago, and I stopped paying attention to sports when they started kneeling and Colin Kaepernick years ago. And I get it. Everybody always kind of wants to plant their flag and say, here's when I said, by God, I'm never watching sports. I'm not really going to get into a appendage measuring contest over who's the toughest tough guy when it comes to sports and not tolerating it anymore. I'm just telling you that my sons and I and my dad and my extended family, when we all get together, the one unifying force, the one thing across all ages, the one thing that we all agree and have all always enjoyed is rooting for our team, our football team. I've always enjoyed a Sunday game, a Monday night game, a Thursday night game. It's always been something to escape and enjoy. And look, given the pandemic, this was already going to be weird. This was already going to be an odd year. And I thought that we had more or less made it through the Colin Kaepernick crap. I think it was mostly behind us. I think we'd mostly moved on. There was an outlying kneeler here and there. TV really didn't even show it. The commentators didn't even really talk about it. It was more or less out of sight, out of mind, I think, and we'd moved on. this Jacob Blake story is supposedly now the, well, I guess George Floyd really was. And the George Floyd story is different to a degree. And we'll get into it, but because I have a lot of comments about, frankly, many of these race-related stories I want to get into this morning. But the George Floyd thing, who knows exactly what it was going to do? The Jacob Blake thing was kind of supposedly kindling on this roaring fire of injustice that's happening across the country, even though it was a totally fake story. But okay, whatever. Heading into the fall, it was clearly that the NBA was setting the precedent, and the MLB had kind of glommed on. Hockey had stayed out of it largely, I think. And then they were sort of pressured into it where they couldn't avoid it anymore. And I've said to my sons, and it pains me to say it, but I said to my sons, I don't think Dad can do it this year. And they're looking at me like, ah, really? And we had a really serious talk about it this weekend. I said, do you, you know, some of his favorite players now on the team we follow most closely, our Kansas City Chiefs. Some of them are now saying they're going to sit out a game or not play. He just had his fantasy draft with his friends on Friday, his buddies in high school. I said, what do you do if these guys don't play? What do you do if these guys just sit out? You agree with that? He doesn't. By the way, he plays high school football himself. Can't play. I said, you know, unfortunately, you know, you're 15, and I wish you didn't have to have this conversation, and I wish we didn't have to talk about this, but I think you're learning the hard way that politics has infected everything in a way that your dad didn't have to deal with when he was your age. And I'm really sorry about that. But you're living in an unfortunate area where politics has literally infected everything, and you can't turn anywhere to enjoy yourself on any level without it being political. And so in everything you do and in everything you watch and everything you consume, you now have to consider politics and how much of it you can absorb, how much of you agree with, how much of it you disagree with before you hit your breaking point and you say, no more, I can't deal with it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to pay my money to do this. And, you know, I think it started to set in. I said, look, for instance, we pay for DirecTV. At the house. That's a fortune. It is a fortune. And you know why we do it? So we can watch out-of-market games. It's literally the only way you can watch it that I've found. And I know there are people that say, I've heard from people that have said there's apps for this and that, but I'm just telling you, if you want the slate of unvarnished games, uninterrupted and easily accessed, DirecTV still pretty much has the grip on that. Whatever games you want to watch, you can watch them all there. But for that privilege, you have to pay like a mortgage, an extra mortgage a year to do it. And I've been willing to do it until this year. And I, you know, they're supposedly starting their season on September 10th. And I was having some conversations with some of my most fellow diehard fans who are friends and diehard fans who are friends and family. Trying to decide if I'm just going to turn my back entirely on the one thing that I really try to enjoy. The one thing that is an escape for me. And I think I might have to. Jeffrey Lurie did 52 minutes yesterday, apparently, where he went off on this. Did you see Jason Peters as an aside, by the way? I know there's a lot to get to, folks, but this is sort of, it's hand in glove. It dovetails nicely with everything else. Jason Peters is out there now demanding. They're moving him positions, you know. They're putting him on the O-line to protect Carson Wentz. And he says, well, if you're going to move me there, I want more money. I just love it. I love a bunch of spoiled athletes now just thinking they can kind of demand whatever they want, like they're at a drive-through window and everything's halting. And I said to my son, I said, look, your dad now is rooting for professional sports and colleges, academia, to fail. I hope, I pray, and I cheer the utter financial ruin of professional sports and colleges. That really didn't compute to a 15-year-old. I said, but you have to understand, these people have built their institutions and their reputations on the backs of people like you and me. These people exist only because we're willing to pay their freight. These institutions only exist because your friends and your neighbors, my friends, we're willing to pay the tens of thousands of dollars for tuition. We're willing to pay the hundreds of dollars a year for subscription to DirecTV. We're willing to pay $100 to park at a stadium parking lot. We're willing to drop another couple hundred bucks for concessions in the stadium. We're willing to spend untold hundreds of dollars, thousands if you're a season ticket holder a year. We're willing to buy the merchandise. We're willing to do all of these things for this thing we love, this escape, this kind of party known as football and college, college football, professional football, and then just, you know, going to socialize in college in general and all that stuff. And yes, maybe get a degree. Colleges and professional sports have been completely poisoned, cripplingly poisoned by politics. And they expect that the rest of the country is just going to swallow them, just swallow it whole, just ingest their poison. Because we need them so desperately, because we just can't function without higher institutions of education, without professional sports. Whatever will we do without athletes and professors? Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. I feel just fine. I literally do not know what's going on in professional sports this year. I don't. My son told me that the NFL season starts September 10th, and I had no idea, and I mean that. I said, I don't even know. I knew they weren't doing a preseason. I said, when do they start? He said, September 10th. I said, you're kidding. 10 days, basically? I didn't know. This is the first year that I literally do not have anything going on outside of the news cycle and maybe an occasional round of golf here and there or some socialization with some friends, or I'll watch a silly movie or TV show or something. But I, in terms of escapism, in terms of plugging into something entirely different going on, present day, not watching old comedies, not doing stuff to kill time. I'm talking about there is nowhere to look. This is the sad reality. This is the diagnosis. This country has a terminal disease called politics, and there is nowhere to look. There is nowhere to look. Sadly, I wish I could tell you not even your house of worship, but you and I both know that's not true. There is nowhere to turn except your Bible, where you're not going to find politics. So I guess the good to come out of this is I've spent more time in that. I don't know. Maybe I'll become a biblical scholar, Fast Eddie.
It might be the only thing left.
What's left? I can't justify spending the money on this garbage anymore. I don't have to. Like, have your thoughts, have your opinions. God bless America. But I don't have to ingest it. I don't need you. I don't need you, Jeffrey Lurie. I don't need you, NFL. I don't need you, Penn State, Big Ten. I don't need you. I don't need you, Flyers. I don't need you, Phillies. I don't need you, Sixers. I don't need you guys. Sports Talk needs you. I don't. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Where do you go? What do you do now that's not political? Seriously. The club isn't the best place. Outside of, you know, for those of you who are believers and your, you know, scripture, seriously, I don't know where you go to avoid politics. Reruns of 30 Rock? It's pretty much where I live these days. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Of course, the reason this discussion is important is because this is, the culture is holding people hostage now and forcing them to take positions, even when they don't want to or they even can't. The culture is now forcing people to step up and take a position on everything. And the Flyers coach, again, this is not a sports segment, folks. I don't want you to misunderstand this as sports. This is bigger than sports. Matt Rooney on the way this morning at 6:30. We'll talk with Russ Joy, a guy that contributes to a site called crossingbroad.com. He does a Flyers podcast, as a matter of fact, and I had to ask him about this. These guys just, like, is it not, you don't have the option to just say, I don't want to do this. Can you just let me be? I just want to play playoff hockey. Can you just leave me out of, you don't have that option. You're not allowed. So I'm going to talk with Russ about that coming up. We're going to talk with Benjamin Mattis today, too. He is a contributor to Newsmax. Philadelphia has the unfortunate distinction of being now the second most violent city in the country, under the leadership of the top cop, Larry Krasner, and our mayor, who dines in when he's in Maryland, Jim Kenney. And then Carrie Benninghoff with us at 8 o'clock, majority leader in the Pennsylvania House. As we look ahead to see what the Pennsylvania Republicans' plan is, if they can wrest any of this control that Herr Wolf has seized for the better part of this year and probably will continue to throughout this year and into early next. The only movement that's not involved with the pandemic is trying to legalize pot. So we'll see if that has any legs. That's all on the way today. But here's a guy, I guess an original French-Canadian. French is his native language. He's now the coach for the Philadelphia Flyers. And the poor guy is asked last week about the Jacob Blake story in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And he's like, I've been practicing for playoff hockey. I've been drawing up plays and studying this. I don't know what you're talking about. And again, if you don't follow this stuff, and I don't, I only found out about this a little later, the world blew up on this guy. The professional sports world wanted this guy run out on a rail. How dare the head coach of a major sports franchise not have a position on something that happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin? He was eviscerated for this. So he comes out on Saturday afternoon and holds a press conference. English, not even his native language, by the way, and he has a better command of it than Al Sharpton. Take a listen.
I have a few words that I'd like to say. I took the liberty of writing a few things down. Everyone can hear me, right? Being French, my English isn't as goodly as everyone, so bear with me a little bit here. In life, I answer to my parents. I answer to my family. I answer to my friends, and I answer to God. Everyone that I've just mentioned knows that what I've said since our post game on Wednesday is the truth. My honesty, my integrity, my social commitment, for some reason, has been pushed to the forefront. After our last game against the New York Islanders, I was asked about the situation in the NBA. We had played a 3 o'clock game. I didn't know what was going on, so I didn't comment.
Now, you know what he's talking about, right? The NBA said last week, we're not playing, we're striking. So he's hip deep in his own playoff series. By the way, he's a coach of hockey, ice hockey. It might come as a shock to you that during playoff hockey, the ice hockey coach in the professional hockey league is not paying attention to what basketball players are doing at that particular moment. Shocker, I know. So he comes out after he's asked about it. He's like, I don't know. What are you talking about?
We got back that night at 6:15 at the hotel. I picked up some food, had a martini, and went to my room to work.
I don't know how he doesn't have eight.
We were playing in less than 24 hours. I worked late into the night, got up very early the next morning, continued to work.
I want you to stop and remember, this is a man who is laying out a timeline of his personal life like he's in the middle of a crime scene investigation. All because he dared say, I don't know what's going on with the NBA players protesting. I can't comment. I don't know. So now we're getting CSI hockey.
I conducted my 10:30 to 11:45 coaches meeting.
Did he kill someone?
At 11:45, I went to get COVID tested.
Like the OJ trial didn't have this kind of... At 12 o'clock, I was back here
for the press conference. I never bothered to ask or check with anyone what was going on in the world or the NBA.
Why would he?
I am guilty of that. I was totally focused on our next game.
Guilty of that. He's guilty of not asking what the hell's going on in the NBA. That's like saying I'm guilty for not knowing what's going on in the vegan community.
Like I said at that 12 o'clock press conference, I am for equality. I am for social justice. After that press conference, I went to our pregame meal. I left there around 12:35. And as I walked out, I saw players from the four teams that are in the bubble talking. That was my first indication that something was going on. Very shortly after that, I received a text from one of my players telling me that they were not playing that evening. I am guilty of not checking up on what was going on in the world in the NBA.
Folks, this guy is flogging himself and apologizing for not following the exploits of NBA players during his playoff run, such that it is in hockey. I am guilty. I am so sorry for not knowing what's going on in the NBA and taking a position. I'm so sorry.
But I am a good person. I believe in equality. I believe in social justice. I want to be part of the solution. I want to help society in any way I can.
Don't you wish this guy would just say F off? Don't you wish he'd have just come out and say, I owe no one any explanation. F straight off if you don't like that. Don't you wish?
Absolutely.
He'd have been a hero, by the way. They'd have erected a statue of him in South Philly, I'm certain, to replace the Columbus statue that's coming down.
And the funny thing is, I covered a college basketball team, and when I was interviewing the coach for the first time over three seasons, had no idea. He explained like what his day looks like as a coach. I was blown away after 2 hours. I'm like, I had no idea this all. I figured you guys were just former players, and you drew up some plays, and boom, give a pep talk, and they're in. Not at all.
Had some snacks and watched TV till the game.
To all of the people that have texted me and called me in the last 48 hours to show their support, I want to say thank you and continue to stay safe. To all of the people in the last 48 hours that have questioned my honesty, questioned my integrity, questioned my social commitment.
I hope you catch COVID.
I want to say, you also stay safe.
Oh, darn.
Is that his F off?
Better than me.
You know, we all have our part to do moving forward to help society fix its issues. Maybe we can all start by being good to one another.
That ain't going to happen.
Society is like a big team. Everyone has a role to play. If we work together and do our roles, I am convinced that we can fix society's issues. I want to thank everyone for being here. Everyone stay safe. And that concludes today's press conference. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
So that hostage video was Saturday. The Philadelphia Flyers head coach, Elaine Vigneault. Oh, we are down the rabbit hole, folks. Matt Rooney just around the corner. We'll cross the border into Jersey. Phil Murphy, the governor there, is a lunatic, as you well know. He's out dining as a restaurant is raided. One of his restaurants, while he's dining there, is raided by the health Nazis. And this cockamamie scheme he's got now. Every baby born gets money deposited in an account. You heard that one last week? We'll get into that.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Hope your weekend was a great one. Welcome in. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Busy, busy Monday. We'll talk about... I don't even know. I honestly couldn't have named, if you'd held a gun to my temple, I couldn't have named for you the Philadelphia Flyers head coach. And I now feel like I'm invested in the guy. I, you know, if for no other reason than I just feel defensive of him. We'll talk with Russ Joy about that coming up, who hosts a Flyers podcast, about just how insane that's gotten. And by the way, I don't even know. Hockey, for a time, I'd been told was staying out of the fray of this thing, but I guess no more. Benjamin Mattis is with us, too, today. He is a public safety columnist at Newsmax and a former cop himself. Northeast Philadelphia. It's apparently, there are some people calling for secession from the city, becoming their own, I don't know what, county?
Philadelphia. Just withdrawing from Philadelphia County.
I don't blame them. And, of course, we have the unenviable position of being the number two most violent city in the country now. And Kerry Benninghoff with us today from the Pennsylvania legislature. He's the majority leader in the House for the Republicans. Their agenda going forward, what, if anything, is being done about elections coming up? You know, you get to mail-in ballots, and now the governor calling for counting ballots until the Friday after Election Day. There's a lot to get to. We start this morning with our friend Matt Rooney, who gets up early because he's got a baby, and this is about the only time of day that you're not owned outright. So, Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Stegall. How are you today?
I'm great, my friend. Good to talk to you from the Garden State. We don't check in with you enough, and it seems we only do it when your governor's acting particularly loony. So,
well, lucky for us, that's almost every single day of every single week. So there's always the opportunity for us to hang out.
We were in the middle of RNC week last week, and I saw the story, and I just thought, well, it'll hold, it'll keep. We were just so busy last week, but I knew it wasn't going anywhere, because even Democrats in the legislature are like, we can't pay for this. But I had to ask you anyway about it. What is Murphy trying to do here with the chicken in every pot thing? You have a baby, you get $1,000 deposited or something.
Yeah, that's right. Starting next year, if you have a baby in New Jersey and your household income's under $131,000, Daddy Warbucks Murphy is going to give you $1,000, a baby bond is what they're calling it. He actually, by the way, he stole this idea from Cory Booker during Spartacus's ill-fated presidential run. So if you're going to copy someone's homework, I'm not sure that's who you want to go to, but here we are. So everyone's going to get $1,000, which, you know, I mean, there's a few things about this that are grating. I mean, the one thing is that for anybody who's following New Jersey politics, our governor was just involved in a lawsuit that went before our state Supreme Court to borrow up to $10 billion because he said, oh, you know, we have all these COVID-related expenses. We're not going to be able to afford to pay for it unless I'm allowed to circumvent the state constitution and borrow. He just gave a new budget proposal where he's saying he's going to borrow $4 billion. Where did he find the money for this? If you're borrowing money, that's not exactly the time to start giving away goodies. But even more so than that, Chris, you know, $1,000, you don't have to be a banking expert to know. You put that in a savings account, or, you know, you look at what, you know, the usual interest rate would be for a bond or something like that. I mean, you know, you're going to have, what, like $1,200, $1,300 in 18 years? I mean, that's going to be able to afford you like one textbook in Elizabeth Warren's class in 18 years. So what that's really worth to anyone, couldn't tell you.
And the fact of the matter is, the math on it continues to be uphill. It would, even if you weren't one of the highest tax, if not the highest tax state in the union, and people weren't fleeing it, the math would be fraught. But the fact of the matter is, there's nobody left but the millionaires he wants to tax in New Jersey, is there? I mean, seriously, it's getting to the point where people, average folks trying to live there and make a living there and pay their taxes there, it's getting harder every year.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, we got a governor who is worth hundreds of millions of dollars, depending on which estimate you believe. And we know that his party is now populated by two people by design. It's either people that for their entire lives consistently have their hands out, or people that are so wealthy like him that they don't have to worry about market forces. Paying a high level of taxes is almost a virtual signaling bonus for them, that they can brag about how much they contribute to the glorious state. So those of us that are in the middle class who are paying off student loans and struggling to pay property taxes and all of that good stuff that New Jersey lays at your feet, you're right. Yeah, I mean, we're looking for the exits. I mean, some of our Pennsylvania friends may think it's crazy, but, you know, you guys are looking pretty good right now, even with Wolf in charge.
This is, at least in my kids' school district, it's back to school day today. And I know some kids went back earlier, some still don't go back for a bit, but we're right in that window of time, the last week or two and the week ahead or so and this week. I know Phil Murphy said pretty late in the summer, that he was at first kind of right pro getting back to school, and then he backed off of that pretty late and said everybody could or should. Or did he didn't formally force all the schools to stay out, but basically did what Tom Wolf did and said, oh, well, I think it would be advisable, but I'm not telling anybody what to do.
So here's all your listeners need to know about that, Chris. Murphy's original position was like, okay, you know, we're going to have restrictions. The kids are going to have to go around wearing masks. There's going to be, you know, some other safety measures in place. But the goal is to get everyone back to some form of in-person instruction. Then I want to say maybe about 7 o'clock p.m. the night before he changed his mind and decided to give schools the option to go fully remote, the NJEA, our teachers union, put out a statement opposing a return to in-person instruction. And then magically, the governor changed his mind. This is a group that has given a substantial chunk of change to a dark money group that is supportive of Governor Murphy. I mean, it's old school politics. New Jersey's run by these public sector unions. They complained. Murphy complied.
You know, and not to do a throwback reference here, but I think about Chris Christie at times like this, and I wonder, you know, let's assume for a minute the hurricane, let's assume the bridge, let's assume the beach chair. Let's take that stuff out for a minute and think vintage right. Chris Christie. How do you think vintage Chris Christie would have handled something like this?
Well, that's what made Chris Christie a national celebrity early on in his tenure as governor. People forget, because you're right, so much happened since with the bridge and the beach chair and everything else. But, you know, when he was running in 2009 against John Corzine, who was basically Wolf with like a bushier beard, for those of you that don't remember. I mean, they're pretty much the same guy.
They are. Are we sure they're not? Yeah, you might be onto something. We might want to check where Corzine is.
I'm worried about that.
Have you ever seen Corzine and Wolf in the same room? Just think about that.
I have not.
Yeah, see?
So someone's got to start digging in that. But look, I mean, you know, it's a really, 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 really bad situation. But Chris Christie back then, when the NJA said, hey, you know, come crawl on your knees and kiss our rear end and come to our convention like every other governor and beg for our vote, even though you know we're never going to give it to a Republican, he said, no, the heck with it. I'm not showing up. I will gladly campaign for your members' votes because I care about teachers. But I'm not going to be subservient to a teacher's union. And that was something that, you know, we got to remember at that point, long before Donald Trump getting into politics, someone taking that kind of a subversive tone towards the swamp, you didn't get a whole lot of that.
Matt, am I totally out of my mind politically when I say if someone, anyone, had the stones to just step up and say, kids are going to go back to school and kids are going to play sports, I'm telling you, whoever decides to be the man or woman to summon the stones and just step up and do it first is going to be handsomely rewarded politically. That's my gut. Maybe you think I'm crazy. What do you think?
No, I don't. I think that, it's a lot like saying you support Donald Trump, right? There are a lot of secret Trump voters out there who would never admit in polite company that they either don't hate the guy or they think some things he's doing have been great or that the Democrats are too crazy, so they keep it to themselves. I think we've seen a similar pattern emerge with COVID-19. If you watch the news, which I try to avoid watching so I prefer to read it whenever possible because, you know, the television is just so manipulative. But if you watch it, you know, you could be forgiven for thinking that if you don't think that we should wear masks in the shower, or if you aren't appropriately afraid that COVID-19 is hiding under your bed waiting to kill you and your children, there's something wrong with you. If you question any of this, you're castigated by the culture. So I think that this is another example, Chris, where, you know, there are a lot of people that are saying, like, listen, you know, we're not saying the whole virus is a hoax, but certainly much of the reaction to it has been a hoax, and it's time to get in our lives. So I agree with you. And if I have one minor complaint with the president, it's that, you know, as great as he's been on so many issues, he's vacillated a little bit on this one. He wasn't very Trumpian early on. He should have come out. He should have blasted governors like Murphy and Wolf and Cuomo as stoking fear. And I think right now he would be rewarded for it. I think he's already on the rise in Pennsylvania, but I think yes. He may be already ahead.
I still think he needs to be more aggressive with governors like Murphy and Wolf. I'm not sure why. I can't put my finger on what it is or why. But heretofore, I still don't feel like Trump is as aggressive with these governors as he ought to be. I feel like he needs to come into Pennsylvania, and I mean to New Jersey to the extent that he would, and say these guys are wrong. They're wrong, and I'm on the other side with them, and I stand with kids going back to school and playing sports, and they're wrong. I wish he would. Am I wrong, or is that your interpretation, that the Trump campaign still doesn't seem like it's full-throated against what these Democrat governors are doing? Maybe I'm wrong and not being fair. I don't know.
Well, no, I think it's fair, and I think that that was the case for most of the pandemic. I think you're starting to see a turn. The campaign is getting tougher and a little more focused. I'm going to give some of the credit for that to my friend of many years, Bill Stepien, a Jersey guy who took over the campaign. I think he's very much responsible for that hard-hitting convention you saw.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, once again, the DOJ is now finally asking for nursing home data from a few states.
Yes.
New Jersey's one of them. I believe Pennsylvania is one of the other four because, you know, on top of everything else, what you just said about kids not going back to school and the impact on the economy, let's not forget that these Democrat governors killed thousands of elderly citizens in these states. That's something that the DOJ should have been aggressively pursuing for months because we all saw it happening. That's part of the reason why our nation's death toll looks so grisly, because governors like Murphy and Wolf and Cuomo allowed this virus to just blow through nursing homes. In New Jersey, we have the Murphy administration memo early on telling these facilities they couldn't screen for COVID patients. Can you imagine? If it had been a Republican governor, CNN would be camped outside their house demanding blood.
Hey, Matt Rooney from SaveJersey.com. I want to just quickly, because we got to run, but I wanted to ask you quick about Phil Murphy dining outside at the same restaurant that, right, I guess in Middletown Township, they raid while he's there dining?
You can't make this stuff up. So he goes with his crew and, you know, dressed like a clown. I don't know if you ever see him when he's not giving a speech, but he always looks like he's, I don't even know. Just Google it. You'll know what I'm talking about. But he goes to eat outdoors. At the same time, the local police apparently have gotten complaints about alleged indoor dining at this place. So while he and his security team are eating around the other side of the building, the owner is talking to the local authorities. And apparently, this guy, and with the owner, I don't fault him for it. Apparently, he found a very creative way to try to comply with this rule that 50% of the space be open if you're going to allow for any type of indoor dining. And they're currently debating that right now. But, you know, it just kind of illustrates the absurdity of all this. Because Murphy's response when he was confronted by the press is like, oh, you know, I don't carry a tape measure when I go out to eat.
Of course.
Well, that's how you've been behaving for months, dude. You know, you've been making everyone think that they're butchers if they dare to want to have a burger at their favorite restaurant. So, you know, I think those are the little things that are just continuing to undermine these fascist governors,
and they continue
to try to make this pandemic just drag on a little bit longer.
And you may or may not have seen now that the mayor of Philadelphia was caught dining inside maskless in Maryland with his gal pal. There's a photo of that surfacing on Twitter last night and into this morning that is going to catch fire as his restaurants are completely shuttered in Philadelphia. He's down there in Maryland dining at a pal's restaurant indoors, no mask, with people right behind him at the next table, by the way. Which, you know, God bless America.
Rules are for us, that's the little people, not for them.
That's right. Matt Rooney, SaveJersey.com. Thank you, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
It's 6:54. No, see, with every one of these photos and every one of these stories of these buffoons and their hypocrisy, this is how a tide turns. This is how a worm turns. This is how the sea change happens politically. And you know it because these leftists are now screaming and yelling on Twitter that Trump is murdering people. They're losing their grip, and they know they are. It's their own fault. Second highest murder rate in the United States. And the Flyers head coach is being badgered about not taking a position on whether the players in the NBA should play or not. Seriously, that the Philadelphia Flyers coach is being badgered about whether the NBA players should strike, and Philadelphia just became number two in homicide rate. We're going to unpack all this coming up. Busy show today. Sit tight.
You live here. He lives here.
Thank you for helping my family and I get through these very strange times.
Can I just say how much I am enjoying your new show? Really good. You are loved.
I appreciate you, Chris. You're doing great, great service to Delaware Valley.
Like I said at the 12 o'clock press conference, I am for equality. I am for social justice.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
So they're in, what, the hole now? Three games to one now, the Flyers, I think, if I read it correctly. Heartbreaker last night. I watched some of it. It was just, it went on longer than I could stay awake. I had to dive in bed, but the Phillies almost bailed, I guess, dug their way out of a hole yet. They got down, did I hear they got up 10 runs on the Phillies at one point early in the game, and then the Phillies came back. Still dropped it, but like they, I don't know, about like the third inning, I heard they were down 10-0 or 10-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people jumped over to the Flyers game, and then all of a sudden the Phillies came roaring back. But anyway, what a weird year for sports. Russ Joy was good enough to wake up and join us early this morning. He's at crossingbroad.com. He's host of Snow the Goalie, a Flyers podcast, and I saw him actually on Twitter commenting on the Alain Vigneault story, and I thought, I don't know what I'm talking about, so I wanted to reach out to somebody who does, and Russ was good enough to do that this morning. Russ, thanks for your time this morning. Hi.
No problem. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. I don't follow hockey at all, so I'm completely ignorant and I don't on the subject, and I don't know anything about the Flyers head coach until this last week, where I hear the poor guy seems to be hip deep and studying his game and getting his team ready and kind of makes an off-the-cuff comment, I don't know what's going on out there. And he's savaged, I guess, to the point that he feels he's got to have a press conference Saturday to explain why he didn't know. So where do things stand now?
Well, it's kind of important to set the context of what happened and why and how it got to be as big of a deal as it did. So he was asked on Wednesday night after a Game 2 win over the New York Islanders that leveled the series. He was asked about the NBA boycotting games and about the possibility of the NHL doing the same. And he didn't have any comment on it because he had been prepping for the game. They had a game time that didn't allow for him to, you know, catch up on the news and you know, kind of just said, you know, get back to me. And they were in the midst of a back-to-back, so it was less than 24 hours from Game 2 ending and Game 3 starting the next day. And so on Thursday, it was around noon, he had his press conference, his typical media availability, and he was asked again about it. And he more or less said, you know, I've been locked in a bubble here, and, you know, my job is to prepare for the next game. There's not a lot of time. And part of the problem is that Some members of the hockey media, my colleagues, in an effort, I guess, to try to get his quotes out, they don't live stream these. They're available to the media for us to clip up after the fact or to try to live tweet. One of the tweets that came out was from a Philadelphia Inquirer writer who clipped the line, no idea what's going on outside the hockey world. I'm invested 24/7 on our team, and calling himself a hockey nerd. And that was enough to light Twitter ablaze, as can be the case from time to time.
So, Russ, so, was that, if I may, just on that point, even if that had been taken in context or not, is that considered odd? I mean, I understand what the rest of us understand as we consume the daily news cycle, but is that odd or anathema to hockey fans, people that actually know the sport? And I don't, so I'm asking you because you do. Does that strike you as odd that he would be hip-deep and totally immersed in something with that quick turnaround time and not know the news of the day otherwise?
For this coach, no. One of the things that I guess is worth pointing out is the way that the NHL bubble is set up. You don't have as much of your own team personnel, so a lot of the team's PR staff that would otherwise be keeping the head coach Alain Vigneault and the players apprised of what's going on in the world are not with them in the bubble in Toronto. They had a limited number of staff that were allowed into the bubble with them. So is it odd? No. Is it something that, you know, he would have seen if he had turned on the TV? Sure. But he explained it, you know, the next day that he just hadn't turned on the news and he hadn't pulled up a news site. He said that he hadn't read a sports article and he didn't know how long. He hadn't read an article of any kind and he didn't know how long. So Saturday he had to come out and, you know, the thing that some people railed against him for when he read his statement was he wrote a statement in French. His first language is French. He's from Quebec City in Canada. It wasn't so much of caving to the cancel culture mob on Twitter. And honestly, it was interesting to watch the reaction to this story as it developed all week. The difference between the Flyers groups on Facebook versus some of the leading voices on Twitter, to just see the juxtaposition of just how differently these sides of the fan base or of the hockey world, you know, interpreted what he said. But no, it's not odd that a coach would say with less than 24 hours to prepare for an opponent that you would go back to your hotel room, bury yourself in your work, and prepare for the next day.
Russ, I, again, as ignorant to the sport, but I will say this, in terms of watching a game in person, of the four majors, I've always enjoyed watching hockey in person the most. And the thing, you know, I've been a Philadelphian now for a little over a decade, and this is just true, I've never had more fun and been more sort of impressed by the Flyers than anybody else, because the arena is always full, the passion is always there, win or lose, the fan base never seems to move. There's something different about Flyers fans or hockey fans. I don't know if it's league-wide or Philadelphia-specific, but I think I know what you're saying when you say the fan base of the Flyers reacts differently than the Twitterverse, meaning I suppose they were with their head coach and not upset with him and totally understand this versus the mob on social media. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a split there, because I think, you know, the typical, if we look at the Flyers fan base from a macro perspective, I would say that a large portion of the fan base is more conservative, is more right-leaning. We kind of saw that in the reaction to the Kate Smith statue being removed last year. The fan base and the Facebook fans and the people in the Facebook groups that are related to the Flyers, they all lean in that way. Twitter was maybe a little bit more split, but a lot of the leading voices in hockey Twitter, and, you know, even some who have a platform to talk about or cover the Flyers, do not lean in that way. And so, you know, the issue here is I think things spread a lot faster on Twitter than they do on Facebook. And so that's why you saw such a visceral reaction to it immediately. And I think that's why he felt compelled to defend his integrity, because he was not only trashed by the Twitter mob, but there were people in Canada, in his native Canada, who worked for TSN, which is their equivalent more or less of ESPN, who called his comments abhorrent and indefensible. And I mean, it was a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And
This is Russ. May I just ask you, and I'm sorry to drag you into this. Maybe you don't want to go here. Russ Joy is with us, by the way, from crossingbroad.com, Snow the Goalie, a Flyers podcast, his own show. Is it acceptable in 2020 to be a member of sport, whether that's a player or a coach or an owner, and just say no comment? Is that no longer acceptable?
Well, it is, and usually in hockey you don't get as many answers. Like, this has been a thing. You know, we've interviewed plenty of current and former players and GMs and coaches on our show, and, you know, like, one of the things that guys talk about a lot is you just kind of toe the line, especially in hockey. You try to keep the focus on the sport and on your team. You don't go for the individualistic storylines. You try to make it about the team. So, no, it's not something that typically in hockey is a big deal. The problem is that there are some people, and they've kind of, you know, this guy Button from up in on TSN is one of the people who kind of expose themselves, you know, speaking out of both sides of their mouth, because, you know, on one hand they said, well, you should at least acknowledge what's going on in the world, social justice wise. Well, Vigneault did that. He even did that in the press conference that he was, you know, getting dragged for a couple of days on Twitter. And then, you know, in the same breath, in the same interview, Button then came out and said, well, it's not enough. Well, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
And so if as a member of the media, you want for players and coaches to be more open about their thoughts on issues that are outside of the hockey world or outside of the sports world, you can't then crucify them if they don't say exactly what you want them to say. And I guess the other counter is, you know, a lot of coaches have the same sort of thing to say, the same kind of canned PR response. And, you know, Vigneault, just by virtue of not doing that, put himself in the crosshairs. But it was, you know, pretty unfair the way that he was treated going down the stretch. You know, again, feeling so compelled that he had to address it and, you know, to address his critics on Saturday. Oh, by the way, they were in the midst of beginning a back-to-back. They lost Saturday. Because the guy who typically is focused 100% on hockey was clearly so bothered by attacks to his character and his integrity that he had to prepare a statement to read the day of a game. And I think it might have played an effect on, you know, what we saw happen to the Flyers. Now they're in a 3-1 hole. And it all kind of started because, you know, one or two reporters clipped a quote from a press conference that would have otherwise been, you know, pretty innocuous. And it just kind of sparked outrage. It created a story that really wasn't a story or didn't need to be a story, and now is kind of loomed over, you know, this entire series,
yeah.
One that the Flyers were favored to win.
Russ, hockey, you know, I don't think it's a secret. Hockey is primarily full of white guys. There's not a huge number of. I don't think. In fact, I don't even know. Can you fill a hand with the number of black hockey players?
Yeah, you can. There's the Hockey Diversity Alliance that was created this year. They're not the only sport that's done something like this, where they, the players of color in the league have joined together to try to make sure that there's a cohesive, coherent message being put out. It was also done in Major League Soccer. They did a similar thing as well. So, yeah, the number of non-white players has actually grown in the league.
Because I just remember sure. That it wasn't too terribly long ago in Philadelphia that there was a kerfuffle about Wayne Simmons, right? I mean, I remember years ago there was the allegation that a banana was thrown on the ice or some such thing. So
yeah, that happened in Europe. So that when the NHL was in a lockout the last round, a lot of players went to play abroad, and there were multiple NHL players who played in different European leagues, and that was something that happened. And by the way, that happens in soccer as well. You know, typically leagues like Serie A in Italy, where you know there's not a ton of diversity necessarily. You know, black players are often subjected to all kinds of racist chants, sound, you know, animal sounds, banana peels. I mean, it does happen around the world, and it's a shame. And I think it's part of why, you know, the Hockey Diversity Alliance was created, was to make sure that there's somebody to kind of, I think, carry the torch and carry the message of what these players experience, you know, from their youth level all the way up into the NHL. So,
yeah, I only bring it up because I thought I'd overheard, and again, I don't know what I'm talking about, so forgive me. I thought I had heard that the NHL had largely kind of stayed out of this. From the beginning, like during the George Floyd stuff weeks ago, they were like, we're not, you know, we're staying in the bubble. We're keeping our eyes on the game. We're, you know, no comment. We're not doing kneeling. We're not doing anything. We're just, you know, soldiering on. Was that the initial position of the league generally?
The league tends to try to stay out of things that aren't related to hockey as much as they can. The stark contrast, I guess, is that the NBA, you know, across the top of the court, has Black Lives Matter, and the NHL had not used the three words Black Lives Matter on any of their signage. What they had done, and what they've done for a large portion of the season, is framing things out with "We skate for," and they had "We skate for Black Lives." And for some people, that was too much. For some people, that was right in line with what was expected, and for some people, that wasn't enough. That was about the most outward acknowledgement of what's been going on in the country up until Saturday's game, when the Flyers player rep for the union, James Van Riemsdyk, actually had a small soundbite, and there was a compilation video that the league put together that I think was worked out in conjunction with the Hockey Diversity Alliance to kind of, I think, shine a little bit more of a light on what's been going on. But that honestly is about as far into a social issue as the NHL's gone, and
yeah.
I can't tell you how long.
Russ, I'll close by asking you just generally, and I'm really not trying to bait you into a debate about social issues one way or the other. I just generally am curious, as a guy who has, I assume, made his living and most of his focus in his career on covering sports, are we better off if we can get ourselves back to a place where sports is talking about sports? Not to discourage people's free speech to do what they'd like off court, off ice, you know, to take positions. But I mean, if the game is going to get as politicized and polarizing, whichever game you're picking, you know, pick all the four majors. I wonder if the fan base, I wonder if the money, the financial model of professional sports will forever be altered or not. Maybe you think not.
Well, I mean, I think that if a player decides that they want to use their platform to promote some kind of issue, they can do that.
Yep.
If the league decides that they are, you know, fine with that as well, then it all works out.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is a financial impact. There is a ratings impact. The NBA's ratings have been down since they resumed play, which has not been the case in all of sports. You can draw whatever conclusions you want based on that. Is it just because of the presentation of the sport? Is it because they've, you know, made social justice issues, you know, such a focal point of their return? Those things, I think, are just kind of up to the interpretation of the viewer or the listener. I do think that these guys, you know, they can use their platform. I do think that it's fair to also ask what exactly they're doing to try to advance the position that they're taking, you know, beyond using their social media platform or beyond, you know, coming out and making a comment after a game or before a game or whatever. Like, you know, are they founding a foundation? Are they funding some kind of an initiative that works to, you know, rectify any of the issues that they're identifying with whatever the topic is? And if they're not, like, I think it's also fair for fans to then kind of say, you know, you have a platform, you have a lot of money. It would be great to see you kind of put your money where your mouth is and try to rectify some of the issues that, you know, you say plague society. So I think, you know, I get why people want sports to be sports. I do think that players have the right to do these things if
sure.
they so choose. But, you know, I do think that, you know, people are allowed to ask, you know, what is being done outside of words? What are the actions being done? And then, you know, you can judge the player, you can judge the team, you can judge the league, you know, based on that.
Yeah, it's just odd. If I had millions of people that were willing to pay me a lot of money and pay a lot of money to come see me and buy merchandise and food and parking, and I wouldn't ever discourage my right to speak out, but I would think about not attacking my own business model. I'd think about a way, as you said, to do it maybe outside the business model. Because it seems to me when you chip away at the goodwill of a fan base, I don't know that that's good for your own bottom line at the end of the day. I mean, that's just me. What do I know? I don't know what I'm talking about. But, Russ, I really appreciate your perspective. Thank you, because I had zero in the game of hockey. But I have enjoyed watching the Flyers over the years. And so 3-1 hole, are people basically assuming they're done at this point? Or I mean, it's been done. You can come out of it. But it's a hole for sure.
I mean, you know, you've been in Philadelphia long enough to know how fan bases react. Our post game show last night, it was all gloom and doom. You know, it's happened 13 times since 2000 that an NHL team has overcome a 3-1 deficit in a series. If the Flyers are going to do it, they're going to need something big. I don't know if they can pull it out, but you know, we'll see. Maybe it'll happen.
All right,
I'm not sure.
If they do, we'll have you back. How about that?
All right, that sounds good.
Russ, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Russ Joy at crossingbroad.com, host of Snow the Goalie, a Flyers podcast at 7:21. Now this, you know, unfortunately, it's, as I said off the top of the show, this has become all-consuming. The politics of the day is all-consuming. It's not a sports story. It's just part of the milieu, the stew of the body politic, unfortunately. And sports is just one branch. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. .7:27 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Hope your weekend was a good one. Still to come, Kerry Benninghoff, the House Majority Leader in Harrisburg for the Republicans. What's the legislative agenda heading into the fall other than legalizing pot? That's apparently all Governor Wolf has up his sleeve. We've been hemorrhaging money as the Commonwealth continues to try to rebound from the capricious and arbitrary lockdowns that he's put us under. And so now he's got to figure out where to come up with revenue. He figures the best way to do it is legalize weed for everybody. So I'll ask Majority Leader Benninghoff about that, and if he thinks there's anything that can be done about this continued absurd state of rules and regs that we live under, where, yes, I know he says he's technically, you know, it's back to school day for a lot of people in this listening area today. I know some went back last week or the week before, but I know my school district and a couple of others in this area are back to school today. And I have to tell you, my wife, I've been watching it this weekend. She's been sitting at the kitchen table trying to put together schedules for our three kids. I mean, she's got the dry erase boards. My wife looks like she is putting in the work. She used to be a public school teacher herself. When we married and our first two kids, she taught school. And when we had they were babies, we would drop them off at my mother's and she would go teach. And I had a radio show, and my wife is putting in as much work at the house as she used to when she taught right now in preparation for trying to guide three of our own kids through a school day. And we get the privilege of paying property taxes to boot. I mean, I sat there and seethed all weekend long watching my wife combing over charts and graphs and color-coding schedules and trying to figure out, and you should see, I mean, Fast Eddie, I could open the phones and I may well do it in the 8 o'clock hour just so you can hear some of the stories of what parents are going through right now as they're trying to get their kids online starting today or in some cases last week or maybe this coming week, trying to get their kids online and get some sort of cohesive school schedule put together for them, particularly at varying ages. Some of these younger kids, elementary, kindergarten, it is mind-blowing how in the world you can keep a kindergartner online and guided when you've got maybe an older kid that you're also trying to help. Why don't you set a chicken in front of a computer terminal and see if you can get it to sit still and learn some things. Go ahead. It's about the same. Put a chicken, a live chicken, in front of a computer terminal and see if you can get it to absorb some stuff. That's what you're doing with a kindergartner.
And then you have three kids, yeah, all different ages.
Yeah.
I mean, are they going to have to sit at the table and do their work? Like, how is that going to work?
We're literally having that discussion. Like, my boys, you know, my sophomore in high school and my freshman in high school, they're like, we have to sit at the table. And I said, we literally sat down and had a family meeting yesterday. I said, look, here's the thing. Your mother and I don't want this any more than you do. This sucks for everybody. I mean, this is literally the conversation I had. This is their back-to-school conversation. Everything sucks. You know it, and I know it. There's no need sugarcoating it. But your mother and I are not the enemy here. Your school district has chosen not to have you back in school. We don't want this. You don't want this. But here we are. So let's not make one another's lives miserable. Let's just try to get through this together. And for now, yes, that means that we're going to have to watch over you like wardens. And we don't want to do that. We'd rather that not be the case. But we have no choice because none of us know what's going on. So until we all figure out a system, this is what we're stuck with. So, you know, give us a break. You know, and the kids are furious. The kids are unhappy. They're miserable. And I could open the phones, and I probably will, just to let parents vent in the 8 o'clock hour, because I guarantee there are stories like this going on, not just all across our region, but all over the country, as these cowardly decisions are being made, based in no science whatsoever, that kids don't belong in school. It's an outrage. It's wrong. It's wrong. And this will be judged as one of the great detrimental misjudgments ever done to children in mass. It will. It just will. This will go down in history as one of the great errors of mankind, this decision to not put kids in school. And it's unforgivable. There's no excuse for it. There's no explanation for it. And I know, I've seen the study too, and I'll get into this a little later in the show. A lot of you have been forwarding what came from the Gateway Pundit, and I'm still kind of sorting through it a little bit. The CDC comes out this weekend and says that the COVID deaths, I mean, not that we didn't know this, though. A lot of you saying only 6% of COVID deaths are completely due to COVID alone. But we always understood this. This isn't a shocking revelation. I mean, I guess maybe we have the hard data from the CDC now, but we all understood that the only people that die from this stuff are people that had severe comorbidities. We always understood it. That's why it's so insulting that our kids aren't in school. Everyone understands what this is, that's sane and not a political hack.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer is streaming live on 990theanswer.com.
Well, while you may not have been looking and distracted with COVID news or the mayor dining inside a restaurant, his buddy's restaurant down there in Maryland, you may not have, you've been in the midst of, Black Lives Matter and what the Flyers head coach said, the riots in the streets. You may not have noticed. Oh, I forgot to mention this, by the way. What I was about to say is you may not have noticed how violent Philadelphia has become. Or maybe you have and you just take it for granted at this point. Did you hear Jim Gaffigan came through town over the weekend? And when he was done, puts up on Instagram something snarky about what a great Democrat-run city Philadelphia is and how there's nothing to see here. And, hey, he was just there and there wasn't looting and violence. It's fine. Philly's just fine. Jim Gaffigan, the comic, declared Philadelphia 100% safe. Everything's fine, and Donald Trump and his minions are all lying about Democrat-run cities because he just did a comedy show in Philly and everything's fine here.
Excellent. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, so Jim Gaffigan, ladies and gentlemen, has declared Philadelphia completely safe. Maybe we should bring in Benjamin Manis, who is a public safety columnist at Newsmax, former police officer himself. So I don't really know why we have you on today, Mr. Manis. Welcome in. Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, has said everything's fine in Philadelphia. Good morning.
Morning. How you guys doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, this is the same thing I used to see when I was a police officer in Washington, D.C. I can't tell you how many times I've been somewhere. I told them I was on the job in D.C., and people go, oh, D.C. is such a beautiful, wonderful place. By the way, this was back when Marion Barry was still alive and in, a political office. you know, the comedians, tourists, for the most part, will come to a city. They will see the best of that city. They will not explore to where people live, strive, and survive. And then they will go home with great reports on how enchanting the culture of that city is. But the numbers do not lie. And the numbers are stark because last Friday we passed 300 murders for the year in the fighting city of Philadelphia. Mm. So putting that in perspective, we're on track. You know, we have four more months in this year. We're still, you know, in a place where our mayor, our police commissioner, and our district attorney have no plan to rein this in. So we're going to pass 400 if we stay on track. And that's a stark thing. That hasn't happened since 2006.
You know what's strange, Mr. Maness, is that there are people like Jim Gaffigan and other leftists who seem to want to make this about Trump. And the violence in Philadelphia has zero to do with who's in the White House. Zero. There's no correlation whatsoever.
100%. There hasn't been even a Republican mayor of this city since 1952. So to kind of make this even a partisan issue, you know, tells you, forget Jim Gaffigan for a minute, because I'm a big comedy fan, but I mean, what are we going to argue about what a comedian thinks? Because, if, you know, all Jim is doing is parroting what he sees in the press every day. And we know that the press is biased, and we know that the news is biased, but this is a cynical, dangerous, and if you ask me, treasonous effort on behalf of locally elected politicians, mayors, district attorneys, and governors to make this a national issue when the truth is all politics are local. Now, every one of these local leaders has the power to rein this in and has a responsibility, a constitutional responsibility, to provide public safety to their citizens. But if they side with the radicals at Black Lives Matter or Antifa, they're basically playing to their voting base. And this is a calculated thing, and you can see that because if you look at Portland, Philadelphia, Seattle, New York under de Blasio, D.C. under Bowser, you're looking at a situation where people are very coordinated in their talking points. This comes from a national level. This is an effort to blame the unrest on Trump. And the truth is there are people getting killed so that they can make their point in the streets of these cities. And it has, you're right, absolutely nothing to do
with Donald Trump. And by the way, Benjamin Maness with us, public safety columnist at Newsmax. Here's Portland's mayor, Wheeler.
Called to get it done. And so I'm saying, let's end this summer. Let's end the violence. Let's commit to that. Is that something we can all agree on, that we are done with the violence? And now let's do the hard work of acknowledging, of hearing, and understanding the pain and the suffering and the fear and the anxiety that exists in this nation around the COVID crisis, which the president initially seemed to be ignoring or poo-pooing, and the economic crisis, which is now resulting, causing so many Americans economic stress and strain. And now the work that we have to do in our communities across this nation in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. I'm up to that challenge, and I hope the president is too. And I'm ready to reach across any aisles I need to reach across, any political divides that I need to cross, in order to bring us back together. Somebody's got to do it. I'm committed to it. I know my colleagues on the Portland City are committed to it. I'd like to hear the President of the United States say he's all in. Let's bring this great nation back together.
So it's a lack of unity out there. People are dying in Philadelphia because of a lack of unity. Again, back to Trump. If only we had a unifying figure in the White House, there wouldn't be as much death in the streets of Portland and Philadelphia, Mr. Maness.
Yeah, I actually have a problem with the whole lack of unity argument coming from people who have literally divided their cities based on partisan lines. I mean, the truth is, going back 3 years, 4 years now, every one of these cities has had an opportunity to provide a baseline for public safety and a baseline for unity. And you know what that is? The law. You might not agree with Donald Trump. You might not like Donald Trump. A lot of people don't. He's a polarizing figure. I'm from Queens. I speak Queens, so I get him. But a lot of people don't. All right? That said, once someone crosses that line and they break the law, whether you're a liberal, a progressive, a Republican, a conservative, you have an obligation under the Constitution to enforce that law. And what happened when Donald Trump was elected was the counterpunch that George Soros funded and a lot of the progressive base got behind was to elect people like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia and numerous other cities who are getting these progressive mayors and district attorneys who are basically not enforcing laws they don't agree with. So when they don't do that, they're changing the law by non-enforcement, which is illegal. So if Larry Krasner had half the intestinal fortitude of Donald Trump, he'd run for a legislative office and change the laws he doesn't agree with. Instead, what he does is not enforce the laws he doesn't agree with. He ends bail. He lets criminals out on the street. And in turn, we're seeing the murder rate skyrocket in our city.
And now cities like Kenosha, well, I guess the National Guard went in and quickly kind of got things under control. But when you start to see Midwestern, quote unquote, flyover cities, as they're derisively called by some, when you start to see those cities burning, what do you make of that, Mr. Manis? I mean, that's next level stuff. It's one thing to see Portland, frankly, or a coastal northeastern city, fall into chaos, because I think traditionally we associate that with more rancorous behavior in general, but not Wisconsin.
Yes and no. I mean, Wisconsin, look, so Kenosha, the left is turning the word suburban into a racial dog whistle. The truth is Kenosha is a suburb of Milwaukee. It's a city, but it's a smaller, like, bedroom city where businesses sprung up. So Kenosha, it doesn't matter if it's Kenosha. It doesn't matter if it's the suburb of Minneapolis where Fernando Castillo was killed. It doesn't matter if it's Louisville where, the Breonna Taylor death occurred. The truth is this. If we keep rallying around these police shootings before we know the facts or before an official investigation has been conducted, and we let people just make up their mind based on a snippet of video without knowing anything, people are going to go crazy in the streets. Now, and then it becomes a challenge to the mayor of Kenosha and the governor of Wisconsin, who are both on that progressive team. But it's a challenge to them to maintain the rule of law. And the rule of law is, hey, stay in your house, abide by the law, apply for a permit if you want to protest, because we don't know yet what's going on. And this is very scary. If you look at my last column in Newsmax, it talks about these police reforms that have been popping up and the fact that even in Newark, New Jersey, this is not a red state by any means, right? Newark, New Jersey has ruled that their civilian review board, one of their police reforms that they were advocating against after the Obama DOJ said that there was systemic racism in the Newark Police Department. This is not by any means an all-white police department. That these were unconstitutional, because what they're doing is they're we're going to ban chokeholds, or we're going to ban certain restraints, or we're going to create a civilian oversight board with no training or authority to pass public safety policy. And, even the high court in that very, very blue state has said that's not legal. So we have to lead with legal, because these laws were written before this current, political deadlock that we're in, and then worry about the repercussions and what laws need to be looked at. And that's the problem right now. Nothing is legal. I'll give you a good example. The big catchphrase that the mainstream media is saying about the protests is peaceful protests. Yeah. You know what that is? That's a red herring.
Yes.
Peaceful protests is just a way of getting away from the words lawful protests. And I worked in Washington, D.C., where we had, at the time, the best civil disturbance unit in the United States, because every day is a protest day in D.C., the government seat. And, what we're seeing is if they're not getting permits, closing traffic, getting police escorts, and, accomplishing that main goal of separating the two factions in a protest, Ted Wheeler, it's not a lawful protest. So when people say mostly peaceful, they're just getting around the fact that you're not even supposed to be out there in the first place.
What a brilliant point. You still have to hear Biden saying something similar.
By standing and recommending that you should be deployed to, quote, dominate your fellow citizens, for exercising their rights to peacefully protest and threatening if governors didn't do something. President would.
Yeah, peaceful, but he says it too, Biden. Peaceful, the narrative is that these poor people are being put upon by Trump and law enforcement officials. They're just trying to peacefully protest. And your point and is you know, Biden, they don't legally have the right to gather without a permit.
Yeah, Biden doesn't have an opinion on this. Someone, you know, a millennial wrote that for him. He has no idea what's going on in the streets. And the truth is, you know, if you want to peacefully protest, that's your God-given American right. But there's a process you have to go through. And you know what would ultimately hurt? So let's go back to Ted Wheeler's clip that you played. You know, Ted Wheeler, any Pacific Northwest mayor, you know, they have a blessing. And this is why the Danielle Outlaw pick for Philly was such a dangerous pick, because they don't really have crime like we do in Seattle and Portland. They're creating it. And it's because you're allowing these factions to take over the streets illegally. You know who it actually hurts? It hurts businesses.
Yes.
It hurts the law-abiding citizens who can't get to work. And we're seeing that in Philly. Every day, if you're subscribing to the alerts on 311, every day you'll see protests in Center City. You'll see streets closed. You'll see marches. You know, what does that do for the essential worker who has to fight traffic and can't get to work? You know, I have that in my family. People can't get to work. They have to worry about when they're getting home from work. The city is still ostensibly shut down. You know, just next week, we're going to see court going back to court. You know, there hasn't been court for 4 months. So, we're seeing a problem in this city where, and in the country, because it's coordinated throughout all the blue cities, where the only people this is hurting are working people. I mean, look at Seattle. They had this autonomous zone. All these quote-unquote Black Lives Matter protesters who turn out to be very middle-class to affluent white kids, if you're looking at the demographics. And I'm not making this up. Pew Research did a study saying 1 in 6 Black Lives Matter protesters are actually black. So, you know, you're seeing these people in the name of Black Lives clogging up cities, creating havoc, creating anarchy. And the only casualty in Seattle thus far, other than the two people killed in the autonomous zone, was Carmen Best, who was the only African-American cabinet-level member of the Seattle city government.
It's astounding. Benjamin Manis is the public safety columnist at Newsmax, a former police officer himself. And listen, I hope we can have you back, because this is clearly, obviously, not going away anytime soon. We love your perspective, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely.
It's 7:53. Hey, I tell you what, it's a Monday. Everybody trying to rub the sleep out of their eyes after that beautiful weekend. Caller 12, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. Let me give you a brand spanking new AM 990 The Answer t-shirt. We'll talk to the majority leader of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives at 8 o'clock on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Hey, congratulations, Kimberly. She won the shirt. She was caller 12. I'll have another one in the next hour, and we got to talk about kids getting back to school and what parents are dealing with coming up.
You live here. He lives here.
Oh, man, Chris, God bless you. I love your show.
Good morning, Chris, and thank you so much for keeping us sane.
Chris, your show is the reason why I get up before noon.
Four things I want to talk about. The first thing is our legislature needs to pass without delay legislation to allow election officials to begin processing submitted mail-in ballots 21 days before the election. Doing steps like scanning in, opening, by the way, this is something that a bipartisan group of county commissioners has already written to the General Assembly.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Wolfie. So far, the only thing he's had to offer is legalize weed and extend mail-in vote counts. That's about all he's managed to accomplish in the last 8 months. Telephone number 610-850-0990, the number. Yeah, and you heard there at the top of the hour now, it is becoming increasingly common knowledge per the CDC's website over the last 48 hours or so. They published this. 94% of the deaths from COVID. Or said another way, only 6% of COVID deaths were from COVID. So we're talking about right around 10,000 deaths of the 170,000 deaths reported so far due to COVID are actually due to COVID alone. Does that matter? Does it matter that our kids are not back in school, they are not playing sports, our businesses are shutting down, our restaurants are at 25% capacity for a disease that killed 6% of those listed as having been killed from COVID? Only 6% of them were actually directly related to COVID and COVID alone. In other words, 94% of people, this death ticker from CNN, the 170,000 you've been hearing, Donald Trump killed 170,000 Americans. That's 170,000 people. 94% of them had comorbidities, which we knew. We've always known. So said another way, roughly 10,000 Americans have died exclusively and only from COVID. And yet my kids, like so many other kids across the country, are sitting at the dining room table today trying to log on and figure out how to do their classwork from a computer. As we bring in the majority leader from the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Kerry Benninghoff. Mr. Benninghoff, pleasure to have you this morning. Hi.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us.
So you've heard what I just shared. The evidence continues to pile up against Governor Wolf and the health secretary and anybody else who suggests our businesses ought to be shuttered and our kids ought not be playing sports or back in school.
I actually hear the frustration in your voice is the same frustration I hear from every constituent. They are just baffled at where we are as a Commonwealth. You know, in addition to those 94% that had comorbidity problems, you know, this administration, along with Dr. Levine, choose to put positive COVID patients in nursing home in the same room with people that did not have COVID. I don't understand those kind of policies. Meanwhile, they're telling the rest of us we got to run around with masks 24/7. We can't go into a restaurant unless there's less than 75% of tables empty. I don't understand how they think their economy is going to run anymore.
Leader Benninghoff, is the worm starting to turn here? I mean, do you think Pennsylvanians I think the answer is largely yes, but I don't know what that looks like. Have Pennsylvanians had enough? Does Tom Wolf know what he's doing? Is it being done on purpose? Is it ineptness? Is it sincere? Is it, and by the way, what are the political ramifications of it? Because if I'm a Republican and I'm thinking about running for a House seat or a Senate seat in Pennsylvania, or maybe for the governor's office one of these days, or if I'm the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania, I'm running on this issue and this issue alone.
Well, you ask a lot of questions there, but first of all, I think the general public needs to decide what it is that they want in their elected officials. We've seen so many mixed messages, it's not even funny at this point. It's just ridiculous. Look, early on, I believe that Dr. Levine encouraged people, don't worry about wearing masks, they're not going to do anything. Now, if you don't have a mask on, as soon as you step out the door, you're chastised by somebody else. I think they want to have mayhem in our communities. They're encouraging people to be reporting people that aren't wearing masks. Sadly, it doesn't have to be this way. I believe Pennsylvanians are smart people. I think they can make right choices. I think when people get mixed messages like that, they're starting to wonder, what is the truth? What is real? What is the science? If you remember recently, we asked for a right-to-know request on how the administration made a decision regarding to shut down all extracurricular activities and sports, cheerleading, whatever, in high schools all across Pennsylvania. And when the right and no request came back, it showed that there was no science, no statistics, not even anecdotal cases that really justified them shutting everything down until winter. We are suspect. That happened then. How many other times has this happened? What are they using to base their decisions on? And frankly, I think we have learned to adapt through many different challenges in Pennsylvania and the United States, and we can adapt here. We don't have to shut everything down. We can be safe, we can be smart, and still go on as a society.
Representative Benninghoff is with us. He is the House Majority Leader in Harrisburg. The mail-in ballot situation, the governor came out, said he'd like to be able to count ballots through Friday. After Election Day Tuesday, I think, among other recommendations. Some of them, it wasn't across the board that I objected to everything Wolf said. Some of it seems practical. I mean, if we're doing this and this is the law and this is the way it's got to go, it there's no question it's burdensome on the system. I mean, that's but one wonders if it's purposely burdensome on the system. That's my question.
Well, I hope that those who can physically can go out and vote and still enjoy doing that will continue to do that. The paper ballots conveniently were requested at the same time COVID hit, so people saw that as a safe alternative. I, at the end of the day, don't believe that we need to be going past 8 o'clock. There is a timeline for everything in life. And if you were to have your ballot in that has been sent to you 50 days ahead of time by 8 p.m., as my father used to say, 11 o'clock is 11 o'clock. Well, 8 p.m. should be 8 p.m. There's plenty of opportunities. For some reason, you can't mail it yesterday and you have to have it in tonight. Well, you can physically transport it possibly to the elections booth and give it to one of the voters. And we are looking at making revisions this week. But I think extending how long you let ballots go and whether you look at stamped dates on the envelope, if there are any, is a dangerous route.
So to be clear, can this be extended by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, or have they already? Because I'm a little lost in the process. The Secretary of State, as I understand it, asked for additional counting time because the post office indicated to her that they weren't confident they'd be able to get all mail-in ballots postmarked by Election Day. Is that accurate? And if so, who gets to make the decision on whether these ballots are accepted late beyond Election Day?
Well, the legislature is who's elected by the people to make these decisions. And we did take the conversation from the postmaster. But at the end of the day, I believe it's probably smarter to change it on the front end. Instead of mailing ballots out till 7 days before Election Day, you got to move that back another week so that there is time for these things to go back and forth. But remember, people could start requesting. I already have people calling me now wondering why they don't have a ballot in hand. They requested them back in August. People have been already requesting them. You have 50 days from the time they're going to start sending them out. I think people have plenty of time to get them out. But if we move that forward 1 week so they cannot send them out for 2 weeks prior to election, there should be plenty of time to get it, fill it out, send it back.
All right. And then in terms of counting them, like if they're postmarked and stamped, is there any reason to think these are going to be counted beyond Tuesday, Election Day, 8 p.m.?
Well, we're still discussing some of those things as we are coming back distinctively this week in order to address some of these issues. I think we should be careful about trying to rely on postmark dates on an envelope. And, again, anything that's not in there by 8 o'clock should not be accepted. So I think people need to get them moving, get them going. We need to take this sacred. You know, voting is a sacred right in this country, and I think we've made a lot of provisional changes to let people have some flexibility. People have been using absentee ballots for years, and I think we need to keep it secure, sacred, and anything that's done, whether it's canvassing ballots or if there has to be a box at the county for drop-off, it better be under video surveillance 24/7.
The Pennsylvania House Majority Leader, Kerry Benninghoff, is with us. The news over the weekend, too, Penn State football not happening, as well as Big Ten football generally. What does that mean budgetarily in terms of operating a campus like Penn State and football being a huge revenue driver? I was slack-jawed, quite frankly. What's your reaction?
Well, you're not alone with that, and it's not even just Penn State's economy itself, but surrounding areas. Obviously, you know, this supplies generally enough revenue to sponsor and support most of the other athletic events. But for our local community and those surrounding center regions, significant. I mean, that's a multi-million revenue generator every weekend. All the hotel, restaurant businesses that go along with that. And that doesn't happen just in Sarah County. That happens for counties all around the area. And obviously, enthusiastic supporters and fans all across Pennsylvania are motivated to go out and buy their game day supplies. Oftentimes, it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event for many families and extended families. It is a significant impact on our economy, one of which has already been crippled to a tune of 3.5 million people being laid off, some of which still can't get unemployment assistance. all the more reason we need to get people back to work, not shuttered in their homes.
Do you have any sense that the governor is aware of this? Does he care? Does he have a pulse? I mean, where, honestly, can you read the governor? Is there any urgency to this guy at all, or does he just think this goes on ad infinitum?
Well, I'm not here to judge him. I don't see him for the most part, and we haven't seen much of him. But at the end of the day, I don't know how anyone can't see this. He was a revenue secretary at one time in the Rendell administration, so he's got to understand the math that you can only spend money that first comes in. To your listeners, you know, government doesn't, federal government may print money, but the idea that government has its own money is silly. It's money that's taken from the taxpayers. And with 3.5 million people alone in Pennsylvania not working, not paying taxes, we're going to get to the point where we're going to run out of money to pay critical needs.
Well, he said
we're
that
we're still looking at a budget deficit.
Yeah,
well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he did say that he can. He wants to legalize recreational pot, so maybe that's an avenue, huh?
Well, first of all, I think it's a fairy tale to think that this is going to be the panacea. I think it's a sad message to send, especially to our young people, that when you're having trouble economically, just go get an illegal substance and make it legal. But I think the bigger thing is two. One, it's not just a net gain. There are a lot of secondary impacts from this that cost us money, whether it's judicial, police services, DUI, while under the influence of marijuana, has grown up significantly in these other states who have gone down that road. Number two, I think we just need to be cautious about this at a time when Pennsylvania is and has been for several years under another disaster declaration by the governor regarding the opioid addiction problem, of which cost us 14 lives per day. Over 300 people in Pennsylvania die from opioid addiction, and nobody says anything about that anymore. And to me, to legalize another drug on top of that right now, when there was concern about hospital capacity and those serving people with COVID, makes no sense at all. And surely it doesn't seem like a good policy, strictly just to generate more money to spend.
Wow, so we're looking at a whole another year and a half with this guy, aren't we? I mean, it's just, this is going to be a long slog with this guy as governor. He clearly is not budging on anything common sense. So,
well, I think to your earlier question, the general public now needs to be asking the question, when, governor, when, secretary of health, when are we going to end this disaster declaration? When are we going to re-steer the ship and start focusing on economic development? That's what our caucus is doing. We're coming in this week to take care of some very specific issues, and we are focusing subsequently on stimulating the economy, getting people back to work in every way possible, and getting normalcy back in people's lives.
Kerry Benninghoff is the Pennsylvania House Majority Leader from District 171 specifically. Thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, and to your listeners, they should expect no less than, you know, getting this economy running and getting people back to work. It's kids back to school. It's good for them. It's good for their mental health. It's good for their family situations and get some normalcy overall.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. 816. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. So are your kids back in school today? Mine are. Back in school, meaning at our dining room table at this hour. I just got the first picture. I got my kids' back-to-school picture. They're seated at the dining room table. 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer. Streaming live on 990theanswer.com.
I put it up on Twitter and Facebook for you to check out for yourself because a lot of you are asking me about this claim that you read over the weekend or you've been reading or hearing that the CDC is reporting only 6% of deaths from COVID are actually from COVID alone. It is 100% true, and I can confirm. Originally, some of the sourcing on it was, to me, a little dubious, so I had to go check it out and dig around just to make sure I knew exactly what I was talking about, and I did, and I have, and I read it myself. You may already have, and I respect that, but I just always want to make doubly and triply sure I'm not peddling anything that's not 100% true, as best to my knowledge, and that is 100% true, and I put the link up so you can click on the CDC link yourself. Just published over the weekend, I took a screenshot from my phone. For 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. 6%. So again, we're talking about maybe just now barely 10,000 deaths over these last 6 months. 10,000 deaths due to COVID alone. Everyone else had some kind of comorbidity. 94% of people who died were ailing and ill from something else, and overwhelmingly, most of them elderly. The CDC's own site says so. Put up the link, took a screenshot. You can share it and read it for yourself if you don't believe it. So again, we ask, why are kids not back in school? When we know kids were never vulnerable, really, from the beginning. And frankly, neither were teachers. That was always sort of a ruse, too. But here we are. Our kids are, this morning, my kids this morning, and I wanted to open the phones to you. I want to spend the rest of this show hearing from you. If, in fact, you're even able to listen to me, because if you're my wife, for instance, you're not able to listen to me right now. She has three kids at the house that she's trying to figure out how to log on to their school districts and their individual classes and their individual schedules and their individual teachers in those schedules. She's trying to guide three kids around the dining room and kitchen tables from their computers this morning. This is the first day of school at Stately Stegall Manor, just like it is for kids all across the Delaware Valley, both in South Jersey and in Pennsylvania, Delaware, and the region and around the country. It's the first day of school for a lot of kids, and they're not going back to school. And I'm hearing nightmare stories. I've heard nightmare stories all weekend long. My wife's been on the phone with women, specifically other friends of hers, who are trying to figure out what the hell do I do. They're asking her for advice. They're asking her questions. We haven't gotten this schedule. We haven't gotten that schedule. I got notes from so many of you on social media, posts and notes at Facebook this weekend, just tearing your hair out, furious and confused. How the hell am I supposed to? And by the way, most of you probably still trying to do some other job yourselves. I doubt any of the people who are directly responsible for this madness this morning have the time to listen to me to call in. But I'll ask anyway. Maybe you're on your way to work, and you are like me, and you have a spouse or a loved one or a relative or somebody who's you're either paying or they're just out of the kindness of their heart helping your kid navigate going online instead of getting back to school today. I'd love to hear from you. This is hell. What American families are going through right now is a little slice of hell. And you may not, if you don't have kids or your kids are up and out, you may not totally understand this. I'm not saying you can't empathize. I'm just saying you may not fully understand what's going on in American families' homes right now with school kids. But it's hell. Trust me when I tell you, it is hell. And it's not just inconvenient. It's very, very, very upsetting to parents and kids alike. And the ramifications of what's going on here will be felt for a long time to come. And it's all for nothing. It's literally for nothing. And we all know it's a game. But here we are. 610-850-0990. Linda has been waiting patiently with her own story. Linda, I'm glad you called. Thank you for your time. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. By the way, I just love your show. I'm so glad I found 990. I didn't know it was there until I found it and found you. And I just really love listening to you in the morning. You make my morning. So that said, I just wanted to say real quick that when this whole thing happened, started in March, our district, like everybody else, has sent the kids home. And we kind of saw this was coming. And so at that point, they put everybody online. And my son, he can't be online very much just because he's got some issues. So we do a lot of textbooking. And I thought at that point, I'm like, you know, I can see nobody going back, you know, after the summer. There's just something isn't right with the numbers, just the whole story. And so at that point, I decided that I didn't want to be part of the stress because it was so stressful for the spring semester. And, you know, the governor came out and said, oh, by the way, we're just not going to do the 180-day requirement because it was so messed up in the spring. So we did, the kids didn't even have to go for 180 days. He made exemptions to the district. So we just decided to homeschool, and I have been considering this for many years because I've noticed our district has become very progressive, and the stuff that the kids are learning I don't agree with. I don't agree with the way it's being taught, and yada, yada, yada. So for years I've been thinking about it, and I thought, geez, am I smart enough to do this? You know, I got a college degree, this and that, and the other street smarts, but could I do it? What is it all about? And so we sat down with our 13-year-old. He's in eighth grade now, and said, this is what we're thinking of doing. I know you're not going to be able to see your friends, da-da-da-da-da, because at that point, we all thought we were going back maybe 2 days a week, 3 days a week. And, you know, and we just kind of decided as a group family that instead of us being under stress, let's not allow the system to stress us out. Let us take control of the system. So we did. So I talked to a friend of mine who's been homeschooling since her kids were little. She's like, you can do it. It's really not that hard. She's like, you know so much already. Tap back into your own education. Tap back into your own, you know, knowledge. Like, why do we think we're not smart enough and the teachers are smarter? And so I thought about that. I'm like, man, I know so much. I actually really do. And with some support, you know, like textbooks and, you know, other things I can find, you know, why don't I just give it a whirl and see what happens? So I did. So we sent out our affidavit to the school district. We said, we're homeschooling our child for eighth grade. They sent an acknowledgement letter, and guess what? My son is so happy. He's so relaxed and happy and has more freedom. And the one thing as a parent, I swore when we decided to have kids, I'm like, my kids are going to, as much as I can, have a stress-free life. And I've been watching for the past 10 years, stuff that's going on in the schools, you know, the lockdown practices, the drills. These kids are so stressed out as it is. Add COVID on top of it. Take away everything from them, which they've had everything stolen from them, let's just be honest, since March. And guess what? They're the ones that nobody cares about them. They really, and I just don't mean everybody, but really the narrative hasn't at all been about the children. And they're suffering irreparable. The mental damage that is being done on a daily basis to our kids, it's pure evil. It is evil. And so, personally, I'm not doing it. I'm not buying into it. And my son, I just, that's my job as a parent, to make sure he's stress-free. And if I'm stress-free, guess what? The family's happy. Because if mom is happy, everybody's happy.
Linda, that's her harumph at all.
Harumph! 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 I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Give the governor harumph.
Harumph!
You watch your ass.
Good for you, Linda. You've inspired us all. Thank you for the phone call today.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
Stay in touch. I want to update, see how that's going. There's Linda taking matters into her own hands. I suspect that's the story across the country, probably. I think the dynamic is changing. And I think a lot of you school teachers who cheered for this, I think you're talking yourselves right out of a job. I really do. I think professional athletes, college professors, and a lot of public school teachers are agitating their way right out of a job. I don't think you know what you've done. I don't think you realize the Pandora's box that you've opened here. In Sewell, New Jersey, it's Al. Good morning, Al.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Doing well, sir. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm a retired person. And I'm married to a teacher, and I watched her in the previous school year go through the virtual teaching, and she was very disappointed with how she had to navigate through the year, and she really thought that the kids were negatively impacted by it. And she is now starting out in service this week, and they're still fluid. They're trying to figure out how to go through this process.
Yes, I that's what I'm hearing. And by the way, to be fair, not every school teacher wants this. I have friends who are school teachers who are just as frustrated and irritated and devastated that they're not back in the classroom. They don't want this any more than a lot of the families do, to be clear. So it's not all school teachers.
And it's mixed. Yeah. Absolutely, it's mixed. Now, you have teachers that have that comorbidity issue, right? They don't want to, you know, they have pre-existing conditions.
Sure.
And they don't want to go back because they're worried about getting, you know, impacted by the virus. But yet people like my wife, who are very healthy people, say, you know what, I'm willing to go back and go instruct these young kids. She's a pre-K school teacher. These kids need that social interaction, that looking at the teacher's face and being able to the teacher being able to look at them and read them and being around other children. I mean, there's some serious issues that aren't being addressed here that are going to affect these kids down the road.
Al, thank you. Thank you very much for your perspective on this. How about you? 610-850-0990. You have, maybe kids or grandkids, nieces, nephews, friends, neighbors, you yourself have kids that are trying to figure out how to get back online and back in school. You know, I have heard stories of people gathering around a phone today because they don't have computers in their house. So multiple kids trying to learn from a phone today. Other stories of schedules not being released, links, this and that not working, Zoom, blah, blah, blah. All for a virus. A virus that is, for 94% of people who contract it, not fatal. Ask you this, how do you think this ends? It's the question that I have asked over and over and over, and I'll keep asking it because no one answers it. How does this end? When does it end? When is it over? And don't say vaccine. Don't you dare say vaccine, because that's a false metric. When does it end? When is it safe? Be safe. Be safe. When is it safe for us to go back to school? When is it safe for us to eat in a restaurant at full capacity again? When is it safe? 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 When are we safe? When can we be safe? Anybody know that answer? Phone's open. I got a line open for you. Come on in. Safety Patrol. 610-850-0990. How does it end? When does it end? When is it safe? Anybody want to? Come on. And I'm talking to you people that are masked up. Keep them home. Lock it down. Come on. Where the hell are you people? Where are you cowards who will not answer that question? How does this end? Where are you? You've got to be out there. You people that are so pro-mask, you live and die by mask wearing. You people that are obsessed with masking up. You got to be out there. You got to be listening to me. Lord knows you're not going anywhere. So I got a line open for you, 610-850-0990. When do the kids get to go back? When's it safe? When's it safe? Be safe. When do these school teachers who are so afraid, when do they feel safe? Don't you dare say vaccine. That is not a metric. When's it end? 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Let's start with Lee in King of Prussia. Hey, Lee, good morning. Thanks for your phone call. Hi.
Oh, good morning. I'm sorry to hear that your wife is so stressed right now.
Well, you know, we're thankful because she's got an education background, and she's hanging in there. She's fine. It's more infuriating. It's just not the way you want it for your kids, you know? But you, I appreciate it anyway.
Well, I've got to say, there's a whole bunch of resources out there, and I'm going to rattle some off later, but just the first thing to do is everybody needs to take a breath if you're schooling at home. Find out what the schedule is at the actual school, and if it doesn't work for you, call up and tell them, okay? You're homeschooling now. You don't need to start at 7 or 8 a.m.
You know, you're going to love this. You ready for this? Do you know that there are people telling kids to be mindful of what's in their background during Zoom calls? and they want people to be mindful of who's in the room. So they're encouraging parents to not linger too much, to overhear other students on a Zoom call, and don't have anything objectionable in your background on the Zoom call. It's like, no. To your point, Lee, you people have lost any jurisdiction. You've lost any ability to guide or steer any behaviors because they're now no longer under your purview. So you don't get to dictate the terms of what's in the background at my home or who's in the room to hear what they're learning. Like, that's all gone now.
Well, see, you wanted to know the answer to your question of when this all ends. When these people realize that they have let everybody out the barn door, I don't have to have you tell me what my kids are learning and not. I'm listening right now. And when the parents understand what the agenda is and what the kids are being taught, they're going to go, what happened to reading? What happened to writing? What happened to history and math? What is all this other junk you're having my kid do?
Yeah. Lee, thank you for the phone call. 610-850-0990 is the number. I appreciate it very much. That's she's a longtime homeschooler, by the way, who's been talking about this from the very beginning. I just want to know, like, to these parents who are trying to, who maybe even feel like this is necessary, when does normalcy resume exactly? When do kids get to play sports again? When does this end? Stay safe. Stay safe. Be safe. Mask up. Wear your mask to protect me. When does it end? How does it end? Don't say the eradication of the virus. Don't say vaccine. It's here. It's never going away. When does it end? Be safe. Lori, good morning. Thanks for your phone call.
How are you, Chris?
I'm well,
thank you. Another epic rant.
Be safe, Lori. Be safe.
Damn, the hell was safe. I don't care. I'm sick and tired of hearing that, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, here's my
question, Chris. In the aftermath of the election is when this is all going to stop. And that is so regardless of the outcome.
Lori, I don't know why you went to speakerphone or something, so come back and see me in a minute, all right? 610-850-0990. Don't go anywhere. In the aftermath of the election is when this ends. I have heard that said before, the election. Mike, good morning. Thanks for your phone call. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Day after Election Day, of course, all political, and it's very sad.
So when you say that, what does that mean?
Well, I think the day after Election Day, if Biden wins, we're going to go through a socialist period where everything is just fine and dandy. We can resume with our lives. He cares so much. We could all unify and all this bull crap. And then eventually when other people's money runs out, you're going to see the bottom fall out. Communism comes in. You see the tanks rolling down the street. It's an old story. Nobody knows and learns from anything. And one of the reasons why is because people are in fear right now. It shuts down the central cortex of your brain or something. You can't think logically.
It's true.
And,
it's just true.
And I just want to add something. I never heard anything talk about it. I read on the internet. The day after George Floyd's funeral, his brother did not go to the DA of Minneapolis. You know where he went? He went overseas, the United Nations.
Man, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about that. I got to go on that. We're not talking about George Floyd's brother in the United Nations. That's another show. But thank you. 610-850-0990 is the number. We got enough problems about George Floyd's brother at the United Nations. I don't mean to be rude, but that's just, I don't have time to care about George Floyd's brother. Although I will tell you, as a practical matter, up there in Wisconsin and Kenosha, what's that reprobate's name? That everybody's pretending to be outraged about, that got shot in the back?
Jacob. Oh, my gosh.
All the names now. I don't know. Why don't we know the name? Come on. Jacob? I can't keep them all straight. We're supposed to be outraged by 30 different people. Most of the stories are frauds.
Jacob Blake. I'm sorry.
Blake.
Jeez.
So Jacob Blake, who was shot in the back and paralyzed, and by the way, I wish he were killed, not just paralyzed. He needs to be dead. If you actually know the story about Jacob Blake, you understand that the guy's a rapist. A serial rapist who resisted arrest and was weaponized. So he's lucky he's not dead. And I'll tell you something, if he had done, according to this criminal complaint to my daughter, what it's alleged he did in that criminal complaint, I'd have shot him myself at point blank range and I wouldn't have missed. So that's completely fraudulent. I don't know if you've seen the Anderson Cooper interview from, I think, Friday with his dad, Jacob Blake's father, who was asked about his criminal past and that he resisted arrest and that he was armed and then sexual assault. And his dad said, you know, Brussels sprouts aren't good. Some people like Brussels sprouts, but I don't like Brussels sprouts. just an absolute joke. Anderson Cooper made an absolute buffoon of himself, and his father helped. It's all made up. All of it's fake. The COVID story is largely, not that it's not a real virus. I don't mean, don't misunderstand. I'm talking about the fear that has been injected into this country about COVID is fake. It's fake. The Jacob Blake story is a fake. These are fake stories designed to whip the country up en masse to make irrational decisions and reach irrational conclusions, like keeping our kids at home or rioting and looting and burning things. Allison has been waiting patiently in Bucks County. Good morning, Allison.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. I just wanted to add one of the stories that I think needs a little more coverage is what's happening in our universities. We just dropped off our only child at a large SEC school in the South. I can't even explain it. He moved into the dorm. It's a staggered move-in for coronavirus safety procedures. For two nights, he was one of the only kids on the floor. There's no socialization. You're not allowed to have guests in your room. We could only be in his room for 2 hours to unpack. The cafeterias are closed. It's only takeout food. You go back to your room and eat alone. His roommate came a couple days later, which was helpful. But there's really nothing to do on campus. There's no clubs. There's no rec sports. The recreation center is limited by capacity for a certain number of kids. There's no basketball. There's no pickup games. All of his classes are online. They expect these kids to sit in their dorm rooms and do online classes. One of his classes, there's no instruction. He's supposed to read a book and take a test. On his own. He's 18 years old. This is not the college experience that many families have dreamed of and prepared for. Now, you know, possibly no football. There's no fun. There's no socialization. They're not, I'm sorry, I'm so upset. We wrote a check. They cleared the check and then changed all his classes to online. It's a bait and switch, and the school that he goes to is not as aggressive about the testing as other friends. I'm hearing nightmare stories. It's like we've sent them to reform school, and it's just not being discussed. We've got to stop this madness. They get to have a life.
What state did your son go to school?
He is in Louisiana.
Okay.
He's at LSU, I guess. There's no
good
mystery there.
Okay.
We're praying that some sanity is restored. You know, with all of these SEC schools, they want to play football. The CDC is saying, now, listen, it's only 6%. Stay home if you feel bad. Don't get a test. This push for testing, LSU is pushing them to get tested. They have pods on campus. I've said to my son, I wouldn't if I were you. Why? If you do get tested positive, they put you in a quarantine dorm or hotel, 14 days alone. They bring you 3 meals, and you're not allowed out of your room except for 1 hour a day. And what does that remind you of?
Yeah. So to be clear, if you knew now, you would not have cut the check to LSU. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the thing is, they've had so much taken away. Their senior year was gone. All the fanfare, all the fun. He wanted to go. I say to my child, don't go to college. Don't experience this rite of passage that the rest of us got to have. I got to go to college. I went to football games. I met friends. How do you say no to that? And then you get there, and they say, sit in your dorm room and take a class.
Allison, I hear you. I hear exactly what you're saying, and I feel exactly what you're saying. And I'm sorry you're experiencing it and your son's experiencing it that way. We can only hope that there is a great pushback a-coming. That's all we can hope and pray about. I'll pray for you and your son and all of the families, mine included, that are going through this right now. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. All right, Mike Gallagher just around the corner. I put up the picture of the phony fraud mayor, Jim Kenney of Philadelphia, dining out with his gal pal there in his buddy's restaurant in Maryland. No masks. Right next to another couple of folks dining there in the restaurant. Total hypocrisy on display, as well as the CDC data. 6%, that's all we're talking about. See you tomorrow.
The Philadelphia. Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. Download our free mobile app at 990theanswer.com.